This is the Best Boys Podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya.
Hello, Wisconsin.
Hello. I always feel like the end of our theme song sounds a little bit like like ESPN or something.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. This is ESPN. Yes, this is ESPN.
And we are here with the sports report.
And we are here with the sports report on football. The our kind, not the American kind.
The our kind?
Yeah, because I'm supposed to be British.
Oh, right.
So
you're supposed to be
I'm
Florence.
Saying the our kind.
The our kind. Football.
Football.
Yeah.
Soccer.
I love England.
I love Scotch egg.
Yeah.
And Scotch
bangers
tape.
And mash.
Yeah.
Bubble and squeak.
Bubble and squeak. Bubble and squeak.
Hello, Monica.
Hello, Jessica.
Welcome back to our podcast.
Welcome back, you guys. So sorry that we haven't posted in the last couple of weeks. We had a really valid excuse.
Well, yeah. Well, first, Monica had a work emergency.
So we were going to record like the next day.
Yeah. And then I got COVID.
Jessica got
it. Finally came for me, you guys. If you are a close personal friend / following us for a while, you'll know Monica and Aaron got COVID, but Jessica never did.
We've had a lot of scares. Like we've had a lot of almost.
Yeah, I was exposed a number of times.
Yeah, and I was exposed a number of times just by the very nature of life. But
and I fully believe that I was protected all those times because of my vaccine and my booster.
Same. Get
but
vaccinated.
I had not gotten the latest booster yet. So I was at my most vulnerable. And then I went to a work event and a bunch of people got COVID. So
awful.
It came for me, but I'm fine.
Yeah.
It came and went in a week. And now we're good.
Yeah. I remember the sheer amount of times you've just dodged that awful fate.
So many times I should have had it.
I know for me, like there were so many times I should have had it. There's so many times I suspected I had it and just straight up did not. Like
same.
I was just sick. And I got it going to Indianapolis. So we both got it in other places that we wouldn't normally be at.
Exactly.
So it is what it is.
But you know, here we are. We're back.
We're back to the show. It's been crazy. I have really just been preparing for the holidays.
Yeah.
By not doing anything.
Yeah. We were supposed to have a Friendsgiving. That didn't happen because of COVID. But here we are.
It's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah. So basically, this episode, we're going to do Florence's second movie.
Yes.
And then we're going to do a third episode with the last two movies. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And then after that, it's Christmas time.
It's Christmas time.
Well, holiday time for all.
Exactly.
Christmas time for us.
Precisely. And so then we'll have some fun holiday movies for you in December.
And then it's 2023.
And it's 2023 and we have a very exciting daddy. Not a daddy. We have a very exciting person. I'm sorry. I'm still stuck in our old podcast.
You know what? I'm still calling them daddies. I don't care.
They're still daddies.
They're still daddies to me.
We have a very exciting daddy to
we
kick off the new year.
We haven't changed.
Someone who we all love very, very much.
Yes. 100%.
I mean, exciting.
Also, generally speaking, I think we should probably at the end of the year do like a roundup of the best films that we've seen this year.
Agreed.
We've seen some good ones.
Maybe we can do a little bonus app.
We've seen some bad ones.
We have seen some bad ones.
It's been, I will say, overall, it's been an interesting year for films.
Yeah, but I will say there's a lot of movies coming out
now. Like immediately.
That
like
are crushing.
The Menu, The Fablemans came out, although, you know, that's just Steven Spielberg's memoir.
Armageddon time, which could be good, but I doubt it.
I doubt it. We saw the trailer, guys.
It could. I'm allowing it to possibly be good.
Me too.
That movie, the new movie with Olivia Colman's coming out.
Yes.
Something about light, eternal light.
We saw Tar. It was brilliant. Loved the shit out of
it. Tar. After Sun. Triangle of Sadness.
The Banshee one. Yeah. The incidents with the Banshees.
So something in Ireland.
Glass Onion. That's my most anticipated film
of
the year.
Lindsay Lohan's Christmas film.
Obviously.
It's a great end of the year.
Yeah. So it was funny because you know how it's usually like a bell curve, right? they just decided to release all of the good films at the end of the year.
And I'm hoping that'll carry into the first few months of the new year.
Yeah, I hope so too, because at this point I was really giving up.
Yeah.
I really was.
No, totally.
And
oh, Bones and All is coming out. We just talked about that.
We just talked about that one. So there are really great movies. The Whale.
The Whale.
The Whale's coming out. Yes. And hint.
You best believe we gonna cover that in some capacity.
Nudge. So I think, yeah, it's really odd. I think we can talk about it more like towards the end of the year. But I will say, very surprising turn of events this year.
Agreed.
With films.
Agreed. And a lot of movies just like very sneakily came out. Like Tar, for example. I feel like I heard nothing about that movie. And then all of a sudden I saw a billboard and I was like, what the
huge
fuck?
It was Cate Blanchett like leaning over with her arms outstretched. Yeah. And it was like Tar. Conducting. And I was like, what the fuck?
And I was like, what the fuck is Tar?
And you know what the fuck Tar was? Good. It was good.
It was a really good movie.
It was excellent.
And we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now back to the show.
Anyway, so now we're talking about Florence.
We're wrapping up Flow in the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned with us.
Yeah, but and we realized we never did a bio on Flow.
Yeah.
So if you listen to the last episode and you don't know who Florence Pugh is somehow.
So sorry.
Now you're going to find out right now. Monica's going to tell you.
I'll tell you. I'll lay it out for you. Ready? Florence Pugh, a.k.a. Miss Flo, is an English actress born in Oxford. And what I've learned about Oxford is that it's very posh. And they speak in a weird accent.
I mean, it's not weird. It's just like standard.
Weird. Or no, I don't think it's, I don't know. It's
weird.
Yeah, it's that. Whatever Jessica just did, that's what it is. Don't listen to me. Pugh made her professional acting debut at the age of only 18 in the 2014 drama The Falling. Gaining her, with, by the way, Maisie Williams.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Amazing.
It gained her immediate recognition. Shut. Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
Hate my life.
I'm sorry.
Gaining her immediate recognition in the media. Flo's international breakthrough, though, came in 2019 with her portrayals of professional wrestler Paige in the biographical sports film Fighting With My Family, which we talked about, quote unquote, last week. LOL. 2 weeks ago. An American woman in Midsommar. I keep pronouncing it Midsommar because that's literally how it's spelled.
Midsommar.
But I don't really
care. I think we're supposed to say it like we're Swedish.
I think it's just Midsommar. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. But what are you going to do? Have a little fun with it. Midsommar. And Amy March in the period drama Little Women. Full disclosure, she was the best part of Little Women. You can fight us about this. We will die on this hill.
She's amazing.
She has received nominations for an Academy Award and a BAFTA Award and was awarded the Trophée Chopard at the 2019 Cannes Film Festival. Some fun facts. She used to do YouTube covers under the name Flossie Rose.
I had no idea.
Kinky. And
Flossie Rose.
She was in a long-term relationship with that white guy from Scrubs.
Yeah.
Looks like he's made out of Play-Doh.
Sick, brave.
Yeah. Apparently they were very happy together, so good for her.
Zachary Braffery.
But then they weren't, so...
It's fine.
What are you gonna do?
Anyway.
Cool. Anyway.
That's Flo. We love her. She's an actress where when I first saw her face, I was like
the Florence Pugh frown?
Yeah. And I was just like another British blonde actress.
What do you mean? We don't have any of those. What are you talking about?
Like, oh good. Another one. And then I saw Midsommar and I was like, oh, she's actually really good.
She's actually bomb.
She's actually so fucking talented. And like we talked about last week, she is one of those actors that gives me hope for Hollywood.
Agreed.
Love this bitch. But today we're talking about Midsommar.
Indeed.
Midsommar. Okay, I'm going to tell you about it. Midsommar came out in 2019, summer of 2019, y'all. Do you remember where you saw this movie for the first time? I was at the Los Feliz 3 with a man I'm no longer dating.
I remember that, actually. I saw it in the movie theater.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. I'm pretty sure You know what? It would have been the Burbank, the AMC Burbank 16. And it was the best movie I had seen thus far at that time.
Yeah.
I think it came out in the summer.
It was in like July.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was it was definitely the best movie I had seen that year.
Yeah.
2019 was an interesting year.
Agreed. Well, anyway, Midsommar came out in 2019, written and directed by Ari Aster. Danny, played by Florence Pugh, and Christian, played by Jack Rayner, are a young American couple with a relationship on the brink of falling apart. But after a family tragedy keeps them together, Christian invites a grieving Danny to join him and his friends on a trip to a once-in-a-lifetime Midsommar festival in a remote Swedish village. What begins as a carefree summer holiday in the North European land of eternal sunlight takes a sinister turn when the insular villagers invite their guests to partake in festivities that render the pastoral paradise increasingly unnerving and viscerally disturbing. This movie is fucking brilliant. I love Ari Aster.
Ari Aster is honestly a god.
He's fucking amazing.
He's incredible. He is doing something with the horror genre that a lot of like it needed some refreshing. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I think he and honestly Jordan Peele have taken this genre and made it into something that's a lot more elevated. And I'm not saying that like all horror is like campy, shitty, whatever, because it's not. There are like really excellent horror films out there. But like, I think they really took out the pomp and circumstance surrounding a horror film, like the screams of the world, etc. Mm-hmm. And they really went for something unique. And they each have their own flavor of things.
Yeah.
And I think with Ari Aster and his like style and his approach to horror being very like, let's do like fish out of water, but for the entire world that I'm building.
Yeah.
And it's very, very interesting. And this was kind of the first time that, at least in my own recent memory, that I had seen a horror film happen in broad daylight.
Yeah, yeah. And they transition you really brilliantly because the beginning of the movie starts off very, very dark because they're in like Chicago or some shit.
They're in like some metropolitan city or area.
Yeah, and it's snowy and it's dark and it's awful. And that's where like the initial tragedy in Danny's family happens.
Yeah. So her sister, Terry, I think her name is Terry, is bipolar, or has like some mental disorder or affliction, and is like having a psychotic break, or something happens where she all of a sudden decides that like the world cannot exist with like her and her parents in it.
Yeah.
And so what she does is, and trigger warning for anyone who,
and spoiler alert,
so both, she essentially takes a hose from her garage and like feeds it into the house.
Yeah, she attaches it to the exhaust pipes of her
car, and feeds it into the house. It causes her parents to like die of carbon monoxide poisoning, like in their sleep. Mm-hmm. And she dies of carbon monoxide poisoning as well. And so essentially Danny's like an orphan.
Yeah.
Like she has no parents and no family anymore. Like everyone's gone. And keep in mind that she's a college student in America.
Yeah.
Not living like with her parents anymore. There was nothing she could do about what happened.
Yeah.
And she is alone. She's living with her boyfriend at the time, which
he's awful.
The amount of discourse that this movie like that came about because of this movie around like boyfriends.
Around like shitty
boyfriends.
It
was so funny because when this movie first came out, everyone was like, don't take your girlfriend to see this movie. She will find something wrong with you after this
and
movie.
And
she'll like leave you essentially.
She'll stuff you in a bear suit and light you on fire.
Exactly. Spoiler. So I think that, so this movie starts off incredibly grim.
Yes.
And very much like feelings of isolation, et cetera, because we go into this like insane, colorful, bright world full of like family and cult, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I'm getting ahead of myself.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I don't know. It's just really, it's really, really, really brilliant and like shocking when they take you from dark to light in this movie. And it's like, it's unsettlingly bright.
It's not like not bright in like a good way, like, ooh, everything is like soft and pretty. It's like It's like too bright. Everything's a little bit uncanny. Things are kind of moving in the corner. Yeah. The trees look a little wonk. Like,
the trees have the secrets.
They have eyes, low key. It's very weird. And they're also in a foreign country, right? Yeah. They're Americans. They're anthropology students going on a trip, and Danny just like literally comes along.
Yeah.
So the whole like action that takes them from America to Sweden to this random place, mm-hmm. To experience this like festival of Midsummer, because apparently this is a thing. I did not know that. But prior to this movie, I had no idea this was a thing.
Yeah, Midsummer festivals are a thing. I don't think the whole like sacrifice thing is a thing. Maybe
you don't think the murders are a thing.
No, but you know what is a thing is the killing themselves when they reach 72. That is a real thing.
No fucking way.
Yeah, there are like certain groups in that area, and it's not a practice that they do anymore, but a long, long time ago, it used to be a thing where in these villages, when you reached a certain age, you would kill yourself because it was like for the betterment of the community so that the community would not have to take care of you in your old age.
Wow. Yeah.
It was like a weird ritualistic thing, and it was considered like an honor. And
I have like mixed feelings about that.
Because
like from an anthropologist, like I understand. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, dead weight. Like you don't want that.
Yeah.
Right. As like a moving, like a nomadic cult. Like, I don't know, whatever. Like I logistically understand.
Right.
Morally, I don't understand.
No, like, but also like, then that just gets you into like, do people have the right to kill themselves if they want to?
That's true.
I think they do.
Mm-hmm.
So
facts. I think especially in like certain, especially like in certain cultural groups, et cetera, especially if it's like certain tribal cultural groups or like native cultural groups or just, you know, hanging out, doing their thing.
It makes me very sad.
Where are we
to
judge?
But then on the flip side of that, I think about how in America, we spend like the most amount of money that's spent, I think, in someone's lifetime is for end of life care.
Yeah.
And like how much of a burden that is. It's crazy.
Yeah. Also like it's like $1 million or $1 billion industry. This like these retirement villages and
retirement, keeping yourself alive.
Yeah. Everything, medications, prescriptions. And then after a certain age, you have to go, at least in America, like on Medicare.
Right.
Or like you have to, like you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Yeah.
So I can understand how in Sweden they might have like, they might have like, hey man, cut off this dead weight.
Yeah.
Let's keep moving.
Yeah.
I kind of get that.
Yeah.
But basically they are anthropology students. Danny like comes on.
Yeah.
Is like, I don't want to be alone right now, which fair.
Yeah.
Your parents just fucking died and your sister just killed them. Yeah. Like, sure.
Yeah.
And herself.
Well, and
sure.
Just a quick note about that. Like, I think that is kind of Florence Pugh's acting like really shines from the get go.
Oh.
I think because you first meet her when she's like frantic and trying to get a hold of her sister, and that the fear that comes into your body when you're trying to reach somebody you love and you can't for whatever reason is really awful. Like that is one of the worst feelings I think in the world is
absolutely.
When you like have this sick feeling that something is happening, but there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
So awful, that like helplessness, etc. And she does such a brilliant job of conveying that to us, but also like trying to shake it off as anxiety. And, you know, like she's basically just bending to everything that her boyfriend says because he'll be like, you're doing this again.
You're spiraling.
You're like, letting them do this.
And he's basically gaslighting
her. He's gaslighting her. And she's just like, oh, yeah, you're right. Because like she doesn't want her relationship on top of this to be ending. Mm-hmm. And then when she finds out, she turns into like a wounded animal. It's
insane.
Yeah, it's like very upsetting but beautiful.
It's like a masterclass in like letting it all out.
Yeah.
Because it's so many things. It's rage, it's confusion, it's worry, it's sick. She gets like physically ill.
Yeah.
Like she looks like she's gonna throw up. It's awful. It's so guttural. It makes you really deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah, just like the amount of despair she's going through.
And I think it's brilliant because then you have that feeling going into the rest of the movie. And it's just, it only builds on top of that like absolute discomfort of witnessing someone just break the fuck down. But like not in an artistic way, because I think what a lot of directors will do and what a lot of actors will do is like, let's make this like, yes, you're breaking down, but also art.
Yeah.
Like also aesthetic. But in this movie, she's just like, I literally think she's going to throw up.
Yeah.
Like it's awful. It, I don't want to see that.
No,
like,
it's awful. And then you have that right next to her boyfriend who wanted to break up with her and then finds out that this happened. And so he can't. And like, I don't blame him.
I don't blame him.
And that's he's a, just a sitting situation. There. He's just sitting there holding her like, what the fuck am I supposed to do now? And that contrast, I think, sets up the rest of the film really, really perfectly.
Beautifully.
Beautiful setup. Wonderful.
And then it goes into Sweden.
And then we get to Sweden.
And then it's fucking chaos. And it's all just, they get to Sweden. They're on a plane. They get to Sweden. Shit's crazy. They're like getting, they're getting shown these beautiful acreage, like this it's beautiful just, acreage.
I would be terrified immediately.
Yeah.
Because yeah. they get there, first of all, they get there and part of the plan, which I don't really understand, but part of the plan is that they arrive and instead of just continuing on to their destination, they stop in a field and all trip for like like a full day.
Yeah.
Like overnight. They drink, just sleep in this field. And I was like, was this part of the plan?
Yeah. Well, they like drink this like hallucinogenic
Yeah, they drink
thing.
Mushroom tea.
Yeah. Well, TBD if it's, we don't know what the fuck it is.
In the first part, it's mushrooms.
Okay, it's mushrooms.
And then later they're like, it's a special
tea. Like other shit, like witchy shit or whatever. And they start like seeing things in the trees.
Exactly.
And like, she's looking up at the sky and like, she's like truly unsettled because she's like, oh, this is low. And she doesn't say this, but like, you as an audience kind of know, like, oh, this is making me kind of think about like the shit that happened to me. Like,
yeah.
Let me just push it down, baby. Let me push it down.
Yeah, she's terrified of having a bad trip, but she doesn't want to. The whole group is already mad that she's on the trip to begin
with. Yeah, like they do not want her there. No. She's very othered in this movie.
Yeah. They don't want her there. And she's like, on top of it, I don't want like to be the party pooper. And so initially she turns it down. And then her boyfriend's like, well, then I'm not going to do it either. And then everyone's like, well, we can't not. It has to be either like all of us or none of us. And so then she's like, OK, fine, I'll do it. Like she's just trying to not to be a burden.
Trying to be like, what's it called? The pick me girl. She's trying to be that. She's trying to be like, I can hang. I can be with the boys.
She wants to be a pick me girl. She does not want to be a wet blanket.
No.
You know? No desire for that.
No desire for that.
But then, of course, she ends up having a bad trip and like passing out in the woods.
Yep.
And then we enter the clearing, which is where this village is. And there's all these, it's disgusting. It's like crazy bright. Everyone's wearing white and like weird villager clothing covered in like pictures of runes. And there's like people doing weird ritualistic dances.
And like orgy and, like, shit.
Weird like synchronized breathing. And it's just fucking weird. And you kind of immediately notice that like there are no parents and children. It's all like, we are all one. So like every older person is like a father or mother figure and every younger person is like a sibling.
Yep.
Essentially, because it's they're all raised communally.
Yep.
Which like I get.
It's like it's a giant compound co-op situation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I would just be immediately unsettled by this.
Yeah.
Personally.
But also like at the end of the day, there are so many groups that all take care of children communally. But the thing that makes this weird is that like it's not just that everyone's taking care of the children communally, it's that everyone sees each other as like both sister, brother, and mate.
Yes.
And like orgy time.
Yeah.
Vibes.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just
orgy,
you know,
fun times.
It's just a lot. It's just a lot. And they pretty quickly get into like the horror, I think.
Really? Because from the get-go, basically.
Then we jump to the ceremony where the old people jump off of cliffs.
And they witness this. So the Americans, the anthropology students and Danny witness one of the elders, the man, jump off of the cliff. And it's literally the still is like seared into my mind. The frame is seared into my mind. There's like this really still, it like hangs on for like slightly too long shot of like the guy's face as he like lands onto the ground, just all cracked open and bleeding. And it's just so, it like kind of takes your breath away.
Yeah.
It's not it. You know what I mean?
Ari Aster, he does not shy away from the gore in this movie.
If as you probably heard from our Hereditary episode, yeah, like, but that
shit
was crazy.
The thing is it's not gratuitous. No. It's like, it's the proper amount of gore for that situation, for two people jumping off of a fucking cliff.
Yeah.
Like,
so.
But he does a close up and then he does an even closer up and you're just like, ugh.
And you like see like the wind, like, literally moving the eyelashes or something. And you're like,
it's disgusting.
It's fucking gross.
It's disgusting.
And Danny witnesses this. And exactly. This bitch has already been through so much trauma.
Exactly. And that really like gets the ball of horror going. And it really triggers all of her fear and all of her just like, all of her fear, all of her insecurity, all of her confusion, etc. But she's just like, I just gotta stick around.
I just gotta see how it goes.
Just have to see what happens.
Because she feels trapped. She,
yeah.
So the thing I love about Florence Pugh is like her, so Florence Pugh is a very stately woman. Like she has very like broad shoulders. She, even though she's like not very tall, she has a very commanding presence.
Yeah, she's petite but commanding.
And she's like very like soft but also very like, I don't want to say like muscular. She's just like very like built, if that makes sense. Yeah, she has a presence. I mean, that's probably why they chose her for Fighting With My Family.
Yes.
Because I mean she's like kick ass. Like
totally.
Look at her and you're like, you could beat me up.
She has almost like a gymnast body.
Kind of, yeah. So, and she stands up very straight, mm-hmm. and she speaks with a lot of conviction. Usually, she's a very low voice, and obviously the famous Florence Pugh frown.
The frown is really it's the star of this movie.
It's really the star of this movie. But what she does in this movie is so brilliant because she really drops her shoulders and kind of cowers herself just a little bit, like just enough to make us feel like she's like a wounded animal, like a very vulnerable creature. And the amount of pain that she puts behind all of her line readings that like she masks.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's like, it's my favorite thing in the world when actors don't like they're on the verge of tears but they don't cry.
Yes,
it's very much like that.
Yeah,
it's like I'm on the verge of letting you guys see my feelings but I'm gonna suppress that.
Yeah,
and there's so many layers to that performance, and that's what she offers us in Midsommar. And I think a part of the reason why it's so believable for this character to not leave, not just be like, mm-hmm. I'm gonna get the fuck out, is because she's so wounded and she's so in need of any kind of family, any kind of friendship.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing. That's why I think that's, I mean, that must be the plot device here of like why they killed her family in the first place in this movie, because there's nothing for her to go back to.
Exactly.
Like her, there's nothing at stake for her, which is why it's so easy for her to just like be in it, but also really start experiencing fear and like really show us that fear and scary things don't just exist in the darkness, which I think is really, really powerful. Like we see that through her, but she also is the one who ends up coming out on top at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder like, what the fuck does she do after this?
And it's hard because for a lot of her, so for her compatriots, for her colleagues,
yes,
for the anthropology students, plus her boyfriend, they're there because they're like a bunch of guys who are like really into like weird shit. Yeah. Like they're anthropology students. They're doing this for a school project.
Yeah, but I also think they're getting their doctorates or something. Their PhDs. Yeah.
But also they're like just a bunch of dudes who are like, yeah, let's fucking party. Like let's like go take shrooms and like enjoy ourselves and like fuck yeah Sweden.
And let's
right?
like fuck a Swedish girl.
Yeah, like let's fuck all these people. Oh, orgies, cool. Right, like. It's a very, very different feeling for a bunch of like young men, young American men in a different country than it is for like a young American woman in another country by herself. Like she has no one in her corner and she knows that. And she's with her boyfriend because he's all she has, period. Mm-hmm. It's not even that like, she probably knows he treats her like shit.
Oh yeah,
but she's like, you're literally all I have. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
That's like it.
There's that really great scene where it's her birthday and he has forgotten it's her birthday. And then someone else reminds him, like, hey, you forgot her birthday. And he starts apologizing, like, oh my God, I'm sorry, I forgot. You know, I thought it was yesterday, which makes no sense. Because then why didn't you say happy birthday yesterday? And she's like, no, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I should have reminded you. Like, it's classic manipulative boyfriend bullshit where the girl ends up apologizing for the man's behavior. It's just... That's the real horror in this movie.
Seriously.
Straight up.
Straight the fuck up is men. Men and their bullshit.
Seriously. And
basically, the straw that breaks the camel's back is Danny realizes that her boyfriend has gone and, like, participated in these orgies. Which is why I kept talking about them.
We have to jump to the May Queen sequence. Because I think that's really where the movie peaks.
Yes.
And that's where I think her acting peaks.
Oh.
Yes. Basically, there's this sequence called, it's like the May pole dance or whatever. Yeah. And it's all these girls, they all take this hallucinogenic tea and they get really high and they dance around this May pole. And whoever is left standing at the end is the May Queen. And the May Queen, like, blesses the harvest for the coming season. And she's like, she's top.
She's like the chosen one. Like, she's like, oh, she's our crown jewel. She's like the best of the best, the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
That bitch, whatever you want to call it.
And
right?
Danny ends up somehow becoming the May Queen.
Like, she has enough conviction in her soul to where she is the last one standing. Yes. Because she's like, I've been through enough bullshit. I'm out here. I'm here to fucking win.
Well, and this is like the first time she has fun in this entire movie because she just like loses all sense of abandon.
And she's with like a sisterhood.
Yes.
It's all women.
She's with a bunch of women.
It's so good. It's like literally, sometimes I will just watch that clip because it's just so good. Like, it's just so cute.
They're bumping into each other and she's like, oh my God, I can speak Swedish now.
Yeah, it's literally such a vibe. They're literally just out there having a blast.
They're having the best time. So she's the last one standing and she like, she gets the big flower crown.
Yes.
You've seen the images.
You have seen this iconic floral cape that she wears.
Yes.
It's actually at the currently at the Academy Museum.
Oh my God, it's so beautiful.
It's fucking stunning. You guys should go see it if you live in Los Angeles. Go to the Academy Museum. They have it there in their like costume wing.
Yes.
And it is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. It's like all, it's like probably like thousands
of fake flowers.
Individual, like little fake flowers, and like no two are the same. It's just stunning.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. And so while that is happening, they pull Christian to the side and they're like, you are an ideal match astrologically for this bitch who P.S. has been casting love spells on you and putting her period blood in your drinks and her pubes in your food.
Yep.
And so now you guys have to go breed. And legitimately, the breeding sequence makes me physically ill.
It's disgusting.
It is so disgusting.
It's gross.
Like,
there is nothing sensual about it. I'm just letting you guys know this right now.
It's all the old, so all the older women are at this and they're like all naked.
They're all watching.
Swaying back and forth, chanting. And there's this virgin girl on the ground and they bring
him in. And
she's
like,
yeah. They bring him in and he's in like a trance because I think they give him drugs too.
And by the way, if I don't think we said his name thus far, but Christian is the, what's his name? Or what?
The boyfriend.
The boyfriend.
Yeah.
I was going to say the husband.
Yeah.
The boyfriend.
So Christian is the boyfriend. And they push his butt and move him into her. It's so gross.
It's the most, it's like the almost the most clinical. It's almost clinical.
It's clinical, but then it's ritualistic and then it's gross all at the same time. And she's like, oh my God, I'm losing my virginity. And she's freaking
she's like,
out.
Wee!
And
like,
she's like, she reaches her hands up and she like, women are like grabbing her hands and they're like,
it's
looking
okay
at her. Like, and they're all chanting together as this couple has sex. And it's, the noises that they're making, it's just so awful.
It's like watching two animals in lab coats.
Yeah.
Have sex.
And I think it's also gross for me because they're elder women, and it's not, I'm not saying it's gross to see their bodies, but I'm saying one of them is the one who gave birth to that girl.
Yeah.
You know, all of them helped raise her, and to have them participating in her having sex grosses me out to my core.
And it's like, you know that it's like borderline non-consensual. Like, you know that she's there because it's about the ritual and not because she's like into
she doesn't
it.
Yeah, she's never like had sex. She doesn't know what's
going
on.
She's a virgin.
Yes.
She's a virgin.
And so Yeah. So, and then Florence is like, what the fuck is going on in this place? And then she goes and she looks through the keyhole in this building.
And she sees.
And she sees Christian fucking this girl in this weird, disgusting ritual. And she loses her fucking mind and is just sobbing. She throws up.
And this time she actually throws up.
Yeah, she actually throws up this time. And it's that same like very animalistic carnal.
She's lost moaning. Another person.
Yes. She has literally nothing. She has nothing left and she is just distraught. And then there's that really beautiful scene with her and all of the women in the.
And they cry with her.
They cry together.
And it has become such an iconic shot of her, like the frowny face crying with these women. And they're all like, and it's just, and you know, in a way, I think if you're a woman, you look at it and you're like, I wish I had that.
Well, yeah, because that, while there are a lot of gross and problematic things about this communal living situation, the beautiful side of it is that nobody goes through any pain
alone. There's a beautiful, like, ethereal sisterhood that exists. Like, and I specify sisterhood because yes, there are things that they do like communally with the entire cult.
Yes.
But then there are certain things that only the women do that I think are actually quite positive.
Yeah,
and
like
I think,
when they're baking the pies together.
Yeah, when they're baking the pies together and like the obviously like the maypole dance and like generally speaking, they feel very like maternal and very matriarchal. It's very nice to see in this like insane horror film.
Yes, yes, exactly. And so they're like fucking there for her.
Yeah, like they try their best to like feel her pain almost to like help her get it out. Almost like it, to me, it felt a lot like when a rattlesnake like bites someone and someone tries to suck the venom out.
Yes.
It's literally like
that. It's a lot like that.
They're like trying to suck the sadness out and like just let it go, like keep it out of the body. And so she's going through this with them. And I think at that point she like realizes, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
Even through her grief, she's like, oh,
well, these are the only people who are, these are the only people who are there for her in the entire world. Like she has nobody except for these people.
She's no one.
And we've already established like a weird romance between her and Pele.
I don't know
how you say his name, but yeah, that guy, the Swedish guy who brought them there in the first place.
Yeah.
So now she's like, it's kind of assumed like, okay, she's a part of this.
Yeah, she's a part of the cult now.
This cult now.
She's the May Queen. She's part of the cult.
Yeah.
She can now hang out with, what's it, P-Man.
P-Man.
And all will be well. And at the end of the day, guess what? This bitch decides to enact her revenge.
Yeah. She is given the choice, like, you can, because they need one last person to complete the sacrifice. They need 9 sacrifices.
Because the other anthropology students are now long gone.
Yes, they've all been killed.
Yes, which we didn't mention, but they literally got killed.
They've all been killed in various awful ways.
Gruesome ways.
Yeah. So they all get killed. Let me be clear, the rules of the society are a little confusing to me. I'm like, I know they do this every year, but do they always sacrifice 9 people? Do they always sacrifice foreigners? Like, is that something that happens all the time? Or is this just because they were all disrespectful fucks? Like, that's...
I want to believe in my heart of hearts that it's because they were all disrespectful as fuck. And like, I think what they saw was they saw this vulnerable woman and they were like, what?
Yeah.
No. And then decided to off all the other ones. Like, I think it was part of their master plan.
Yeah. I'm like, because they don't seem like a cult that just kills people constantly. I think they sacrifice some of their own. And but for them, it's like an honor.
Like, I literally, because obviously the so here's my theory. Obviously, the anthropology group, like the students knew about this.
Right.
And so obviously this is like common knowledge that like, oh, this Midsummer festival happens and this specific cult does it.
Yeah.
So clearly they're not hiding. No. Like they're not out here like we're secretly sacrificing people. I genuinely believe they came. They host like a ton of people. There was a bus. Like, I think that they host people all the time. But they leave unscathed, obviously.
Yeah.
I think that in this specific instance, they saw them like
they like violated belittling, various, like yeah
they like violated so many of their ways, their rituals, and they were disrespectful towards one of their own, mm-hmm. and they see that as disrespect, and they're like fuck this, and they're like, we're offing all of y'all, you all have to die now.
Yes.
And so that's my theory, is that like they don't normally kill people.
That's my guess as well. And so like at the end they need 9 sacrifices, and two have volunteered from the cult, and they're like, oh my God, what an honor. Blah. They need one more. And so they draw a name at random and they say, okay, the May Queen can now choose to either sacrifice the person that we randomly chose, or she can choose to sacrifice Christian, who has been incapacitated with some magic dust that got blown in his face. And he's been stuffed inside of a bear carcass.
He's in a shed. In a bear carcass.
He's in a bear carcass.
It's a Russian nesting doll situation.
Yeah. He's in a bear carcass and she's like, I choose Christian. And then they all put them inside of a big yellow building.
Yeah.
And they set it on
fire.
Like,
well, it's like a shed.
Yeah, it's a shed.
Like, it's a fancy shed. Yeah. I would call it a fancy shed.
It's a sacrifice shed.
Sacrifice shed.
Yes.
And they set it on fire and the end.
And literally. It's that iconic shot of her frowning in her May Queen costume and then smiling, and then it's the end, and it's fucking unsettling, but it's so good.
But it's literally fucking feminist.
This is feminism.
It's literally feminism. Like I will say the ending of that movie, I was like, yes, bitch, like yes. Get yours, like fuck that guy in the bear costume.
Yes, he deserved to burn.
He burned it all down.
Listen, I'm not saying that if you cheat on your girlfriend, you deserve to be set on fire.
In a bear carcass. Well, like, where are you going to get a bear carcass?
Christian was like an objectively shitty guy.
Awful man. So. And his friends were all, like all the guys were just bad guys. Like they were all mean and like, you know those like fraternity guys that are just
I will say, what's his name? I forget his character's name, but he's played by William Jackson Harper.
Yes.
His character isn't that bad. He's just like genuinely trying to learn. And I think the only thing bad that he does is he goes into their like temple or whatever. Like,
it's a sacred place, I think.
Yeah, he goes into their sacred place at night and he's like looking at a book that he shouldn't be looking at.
Because they literally tell them the fucking rules from the beginning. They're like, don't look at this shit.
Don't look at the ruby
holder. Yeah, they're like, don't go in there. Like, how the fuck are you trying to like break these bitches' rules? Like, exactly. If I'm going to this cult, I have to follow their rules.
Yeah.
Period.
He doesn't follow the rule. And then they kill him and bury him in a garden.
Honestly, like, you don't go to a Catholic church and like hang out, open up the tabernacle and go whippy crackers. Like, that's like not what happens. You follow the rules and go, that weird looking monument thing looks like it has crackers in it. I should probably let that go. Like, I should probably not touch that.
I'm gonna open the cracker box.
I'm gonna not. This Jack's not getting any crackers tonight. So frankly, I blame him. I just think that when you walk into a cult, you follow their rules or you follow the rules
and then you leave with your head.
Yeah.
The end.
Dumbasses, I swear to God. She was the only one who followed the rules too.
Exactly.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
Anyway, she's amazing.
And her frown turned upside down.
Yes, girl.
And she was fucking phenomenal.
I love her. I love this movie. Ugh. I love Florence.
It's just so good. She really shines. Like, it's almost like this movie was a little crown and she was that little jewel at the top. Like, she was the crown jewel. She was beautiful. She was, like, she had such an impressive and beautiful performance. She had such a range from all the way from the beginning to the end. She stuck with it. I know that, like, filming this movie, they had like the cast was great and they like all gave each other food all the time and she was always cooking for them. And from what I read, it was like a very positive experience too. So I'm glad that she had that and that A24 brought her into the family. I'm Vin Diesel and bring you to my fucking family. So, you know, at the end of the day, I'm glad that this movie really solidified her as like
totally
a star.
Yeah,
in this America. Was like,
okay, now Florence Pugh is a star.
And then Little Women came out and people were like, fuck, yeah.
Yeah, she had a crazy year.
It was insane.
It was insane. Yeah.
Um, And that was Miss Floor in Midsommar. Which, speaking of Little Women, and I think we said this last episode, but we talk extensively about her performance in Little Women in our Greta Gerwig episode.
Yes, from long ago.
So
now I'm going to tell you who the best boys of this movie were.
Tell us.
Okay. First, we have five. We have Norbert Foldy. I believe he's Hungarian. Yes. Best boy, rigging electrician / rigging gaffer in Hungary. Yay, Norbert. Then we have Corey Mills, best boy in Utah. David Nagy? Best boy electrician. You go, David. David. I don't know. There's an accent in there. Alex Stein, best boy grip, Utah. And Mate Tolle, best boy grip, Hungary / best boy grip. Yay!
The best boys.
The best boys.
Congratulations, guys. You made a kick-ass movie.
You made a great movie.
Very bright movie. 10 out of 10. Really good.
Well, this is the end.
Yeah, we have to go to the craft fair.
Yeah, we're going to go to a craft fair now.
So. Yeah. So enjoy the rest of your days.
Yeah.
We'll see you very soon.
You're the best, Monica.
You're the best, Jessica.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.